Dear Abby once received a letter from a 15-year-old girl, which read as follows. Happiness is getting the kind of telephone call you've been praying for. And happiness is getting good grades that make your parents proud of you. Happiness is becoming a member of a popular circle. Happiness is having parents who don't fight. Happiness is knowing that you're dressed as well as anyone else. Happiness is something I do not have. Signed, 15 and unhappy. Now, shortly after that letter was published, Dear Abby then received a response from a 13-year-old girl who wrote, Dear Abby, happiness is being able to walk. Happiness is being able to talk. Happiness is being able to see. Unhappiness is reading a letter from a 15-year-old girl who can do all three of these things and still says she is not happy. I can talk, I can see, I can hear, but I cannot walk. Signed, 13 and happy. Now, one of the characters in today's gospel story is a rich man who actually did believe that happiness depended upon money and possessions. He is the kind of man who would really have agreed with that letter from the 15-year-old girl who told Dear Abby that happiness is knowing that you are dressed just as well as anyone else. The outer garment that this man wore in the story was made of the very finest wool, dyed deep purple. A sign of distinction, his undergarments were made from the finest linen from Egypt. Those were status symbols in those days. And whenever a man would don that kind of purple garment, he would say symbolically to the world, look at me, I am a rich man. But the second character in this story today is a very sick beggar named Lazarus. His body is filled with sores, and the dogs would come and lick them. He is shown lying at the gate of the mansion of this rich man, hoping that maybe he just might be able to receive a few scraps from the kind of meals that are served inside the home of the rich man. We must remember that these are not ordinary table scraps. These are simply the remnants of little bits of bread that are dipped into the finger bowls and then used by the diners to wipe their hands, as we would use finger towels today. Then after these ablutions or washings were performed, these soggy pieces of bread were then thrown under the table out of sight for the pets of the owners to eat. It was this kind of food that Lazarus wanted for nourishment. It means that the sin of the rich man giving the banquet was a kind of callous indifference to the anguish of the poor. Poor in any kind, symbolized by Lazarus. But then we notice that the story scene takes a shift, and both the rich man and Lazarus have died, and they've both gone to Hades, which is the abode for the dead, where they have been separated, however, by this giant great chasm. Now, in those days, the people thought of Hades as a kind of staging area, where the good people and the evil would wait in separate quarters for the time of final judgment. But we discover in the staging area, Lazarus is now safe in the bosom of Abraham. But on the other side of the chasm is the rich man who is in a state of great torment. And despite his pleas, he is told that nothing will convince his brothers, even if someone would rise from the dead. To understand this story with many implications, the first thing that must be said is that Jesus is not telling the story to give us some kind of an idea of the afterlife. That's not the point. Jesus is using the kind of images of afterlife that were deeply embedded in the consciousness of the Jewish people of his time to whom he was telling the story. If we would concentrate on that aspect of the story, we would miss entirely the point of the parable. Jesus was telling the story for the benefit of the Pharisees, whom he would criticize so often for their hardness of heart, their stubborn resistance to the warnings that he would give to change their lives. Jesus was warning the Pharisees that their attitude made it impossible for anyone to get through to them, to convince them to reorder the priorities of their lives and to change their lifestyle. He wanted them to change their value system that consistently would place so much strict observance on the letter of the law rather than a spirit of compassion. He wanted them to reverse this attitude of being holier than thou. And he knew that unless he could open up their hard hearts to receive the good news, no one would ever be able to get to them, not even if someone should rise from the dead. We people today also get into this kind of rut. Jesus is trying to get through to us. And he is saying that not even the risen Christ, who did rise from the dead, is able to get through to us if we remain unwilling to be open of heart and learn how to listen to the depths of his words prayerfully, humbly. If we react to the gospel story today by saying bravo for Lazarus and serves him right for the rich man, we learn nothing at all. We are able to learn so much today if we identify with the five brothers of Lazarus. That's the point of the story today. To learn from the five living brothers. Then there is still a future possibility for us. The messengers of God were not dead men in temporary assignment from Hades. In their own lifetime, Moses and the prophets were not visitors from down below in the netherworld telling ghost stories. Moses and the prophets, Jesus is saying, were very live people. And they had caught this extraordinary glimpse of the meaning of life, the purpose of life, what it's all about. And these prophets, Amos and all of the other great prophets, were trying to announce this good news to the people of how to find happiness and meaning. Today, our own personal resurrection faith, the greatest gift that we have, tells us that the risen Christ lives now, here, in our midst, within our hearts, within us. We gather for the Eucharist as the disciples did. They knew the Lord at the breaking of the bread, as we do now. This same risen Christ is here in our midst now, calling us to change, to open up our hearts to repentance, to new life. The same risen Christ is now here in our midst, showing us how to make life worthwhile. He is pointing out to us how to discover genuine happiness. The question, of course, is what is happiness for people today? We seek it everywhere. We pursue it. But most people do not know what the meaning of it is. You remember the lines from the play in the 1940s, Oklahoma. Oh, what a beautiful morning, what a beautiful day. I had a wonderful feeling. Everything's going my way. We tend to think of happiness in that light. When everything is going our way, then I'll be happy. It's like being on a constant treadmill. We can run all of our life, but we'll never reach the point where everything is always going our way. There's no possibility in this life, at any time, that everything is going to go our way. The psalmist has written, "Happy are those people who take refuge in the Lord." It means that genuine, authentic happiness is the right of all people who learn to trust in the living God. When everything is going their way, but above all, when everything is not going their way, both ways. Lazarus is at our doorstep in as many forms as you and I experience human troubles. Whenever we encounter Lazarus in all the troubles of life and all the troubled people of life, then it is for us to show Lazarus that we are the people fortunate enough with our faith to have heard the good news of the resurrection from the one who is risen from the dead, our brother Jesus, who speaks words of life to us each weekend when we gather at the table. We are asked then to show that the genuinely happy person shares that good news of risen life and reaches out to the troubled person in distress, and shows that we have the strength to care, to be compassionate. That we are the people today who are fortunate enough, through our faith, to know the risen Lord in the breaking of the bread, here, in the Word,